listening to WQED's Voice of the Arts podcast. I'm Emily Bruner, and today we have the senior curator from the Heinz History Center, Leslie Sibilic.
Thanks. It's really a pleasure to be here this afternoon with you.
Yeah, it's so great to have you. Well, we're going to talk about this brand new exhibit that you just opened. It's called A Woman's Place, How Women Shaped Pittsburgh. Very interesting exhibit. It's got a lot to talk about, and it talks about iconic women in Pittsburgh. So can you talk a little bit more? Why did we do this now?
And well, I'll tell you. It was a project that was a long time in coming. Mm. On the one hand, we have talked about doing something like this for many, many years. You know, we as the Heinz History Center, we like to tell different stories, look at all the different ways that people made contributions to the community and to this region, and how people from this region made contributions to the nation and then internationally. And we have discussed before this idea that, you know, in a city, in a region that was so focused on industry, steel, coal, iron, things like that, the women's stories sometimes tended to be overshadowed by other kinds of narratives. I will also say that we had really started talking about this prior to the pandemic in the build-up to the 100th anniversary celebration for the 19th Amendment, the suffrage amendment. We had other plans, and of course, as like everybody else in the cultural community, COVID kind of put the kibosh on those, and really we went back to square one, had a couple other ideas, and finally moved forward with putting something together that is a very large project that takes a thematic approach to looking at some of the ways that women have shaped this region, who some of those famous people were. It includes an illustrated timeline that traces kind of some of the battles that women have faced and fought, starting with things like temperance and abolitionism. What are some of the first ways that women got into the kind of public sphere in terms of debate? And it really goes up to the present. And then the rest of it is kind of a thematic look at some of the major topics, both things represented in our collection, and then some of those areas where you really think in terms of women in Pittsburgh and some of the most famous names come up. And honestly, what we hope is that people will visit and see a combination of some really expected names. Mm-hmm. Nellie Bly, for example, is very well known for this region. And then maybe discover some unknown stories as well. We've really dug deep to find some things that we hope that are new for people.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds really fun. Sounds like it's a long process, and so it's long due coming. So that's really great to have it there finally. And so you talked about Nellie Bly, but who else should we know about that's in this exhibit?
I would say that some of the other Pittsburgh or Western Pennsylvania women that people hopefully may have heard of course, I mentioned Nellie Bly. There is a very famous radio DJ, Mary D., African-American, from what was at that point WHOD, a radio station in the Hill. Oh. We have someone like costumes related to Mary Cardwell Dawson and the creation of the National Negro Opera Company. And, you know, sometimes the well-known individuals aren't actually even, in this case, a real person, but symbolic of something larger in the region. We also, in this exhibit, pay attention to the history of, you have probably seen the poster, We Can Do It, this famous woman, and she's flexing her arm. We now call her, oh, it's Rosie the Riveter. Well, she wasn't actually known by Rosie at the time when the poster came out, but she's now become associated with that. And she's really, today, this wonderful symbol of women's empowerment. And we look a little bit at that, at the background of where did that image come from?
Yeah.
Connected with a very well-known Pittsburgh industry. And then how does that kind of represent new meanings for women today? And to pair that, one of the areas that we feature some of the material related to that topic is the story of the Girls of Steel, the CMU, the Carnegie Mellon University, I should not abbreviate that, the robotics team, where the students had to pick a logo and a mascot, and they picked her. So they have this great t-shirt with this version of the woman with a robotic arm, and they wear this plaid little flannel shirt, and they have a headband that has the white and the red and white polka dot bandana, and you know, they screen this on the robots. And this really, it's this great kind of mixing of encouraging students who might otherwise not go into STEM to explore things like robotics and competition. And it's just this lovely visual hark back to the earlier image of what we now call Rosie.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds so interesting. And then, you know, everybody knows Rosie the Riveter, right? Everybody learns about her in school, but nobody really learns the backstory about her and who she was.
Yeah. And for us, you know, it's interesting in Pittsburgh because the image you see on the poster, she probably was, if we had to guess, you know, Westinghouse, she probably was maybe some kind of a munitions inspector or something like that. They weren't doing a lot of riveting.
Right.
And my personal kind of philosophy is, and we do look at this in the exhibit, is that if you want to pick that kind of symbol of women working during World War II here, I might actually suggest it wasn't the riveter, it was the welder, Winnie the Welder. You have places like DeVoe and American Bridge. They're creating these huge, they called them landing ship tanks, larger than a football field. And they were able to mass produce them because they kind of fabricated the pieces at local manufacturers and then they assembled them by the river and they used welding to put these things together. And it was really the first time that some of these companies opened up welding classes to women. And so these huge ships, scholars really believe that some of them were made by all women welding crews. So it's this great little just microcosm of all the other things going on during World War II.
Yeah. Ooh, fun. And we talked about, you know, Mary Will Dawson, who's, they're doing an opera about her.
They are. And I have to say, I have not seen it yet. And I have caught some of the announcements for that. And it's really something that I'd like to see. You know, she is one of those remarkable stories. And there are multiple in the exhibit where you find these women who their own path to some degree was blocked, whether it was by, in her case, racism or by, you know, the standards of the day, the expectations of propriety. And she didn't let her stop that. But I think what is most amazing to me about her story is that she didn't just go out and seek a way to create the opportunity for herself. Instead, she pivoted and she created that opportunity for all these other performers. I mean, going to the Met, doing that before was something that any other group of her kind had done there. I mean, it just, you know, her performance group was I may be mistaken, but I don't think so. I believe they were the first African-American troupe like that to actually perform at the Met.
Yeah. You know,
what did it take to get there? And so the exhibit is, I have to say, it really is paying acknowledgement, a kind of a nod towards those sort of stories.
Yeah.
It's a mix. It is kind of those barrier breakers, the kind of stories that you think of when you talk about that project. I will say we also really tried to find some stories as well that represented the more universal experiences of women in Pittsburgh. What did they face in the region? You know, you talk about the communities in the surrounding area, Clareton, Duquesne, Homestead, Braddock, these immigrant industry-based communities. You know, women working there, living there, raising families there, they might not have been what we define as barrier breakers, but they kept those neighborhoods, they kept those families afloat. So we do have a nod to that, too. There's a piece of it that features a wonderful multimedia program based on a collection in our archives, the story of one family and this woman's experience and the experience of how she kept the family together after the husband is killed in a mill accident is really symbolic of so many other families across this region and how for generations they kept going despite really difficult circumstances.
Yeah, really difficult. And you talked about kind of the different artifacts you have. You said, oh, there's like a multimedia thing. Did you pull straight from your archives or was there some collaboration?
Well, I'll tell you, a large portion of this, some would say maybe too much, is from our own collection. This is a wonderful kind of project that allowed us to pull out materials that haven't in many cases been on display before. There are quite a few costumes as part of it. There are other materials as well. There are archival collections. Mm-hmm. It ranges from, of course, there are always a lot of photographs both small and then blown up and presented in a very large fashion, but other kinds of pieces, documents, for example, an indenture. We look at a little bit of the early history of women in the early to mid 1800s, what it's sometimes difficult to track their lives.
Yeah.
They were working in the home. The husband, the father, the brothers were out, whether they're getting involved in business or politics. Their activities were recorded. So we asked them questions about how do we figure out what these women were doing? And then, you know, what was the experience of girls? We have one piece. The archives actually has two of them. We have one that's out on display. This indenture, which is in effect a contract for an 8-year-old girl who is placed in this woman's home, and they're going to teach her the art and mystery of housekeeping. And it sounds from the material on the indenture like she is an Irish immigrant. Mm. And you look at that, on the one hand, you think, oh, how could a mother place an 8-year-old daughter in the home of someone else? And yet, for 10 years, she was going to do this. She was going to learn an employable skill.
Right.
From what we have in the collection, we have two copies of this, and they have one side on both clipped out. So it really does seem like they finished the contract.
Oh, wow.
That she fulfilled the terms of this. As a historian and a public kind of a person who likes to deal with the public side of history and how do we get people to think about it in new ways, you know, I like that kind of example because it makes us think in two ways. We would never go ahead and offer an 8-year-old.
Right,
you
know, no.
But at the time, it was someone trying to give their child both a better kind of life, a different occupation, and probably it was a more stable housing situation than might have had. And so we hope people come in and kind of ask some questions about the pieces that are there and maybe think about them and say, wow, that's not a scenario I thought about. But one example, one document probably represents how many other people and their experience in the region.
Yeah. With this exhibit, I mean, you have the arts, you have politics, you have all these amazing women from so many different sectors. Are you doing like programming around it? Or you?
We are. We are starting the process of finalizing programming. We have the first major event is coming up on May 5th. Mm. And that is kind of collaboration. One of the groups that we have worked with for a part of the exhibit and that we'll be working with in terms of this program is the Women's Press Club of Pittsburgh.
Mm.
And we are bringing in the author Brooke Kroger, who is one of the best known biographers of Nellie Bly. This is one of our first programs that's actually, it's on May 5th. I believe that's her birthday.
Okay.
It's right around the time period. There are so many names and dates and facts that I'm sure I get a few of them wrong. But we're bringing in Brooke Kroger. She's going to talk about her new book, Undaunted, How Women Changed American Journalism, highlighting a little bit of Nellie and then some other fabulous local figures, people like Ida Tarbell, for example. And then we'll include with that a discussion with some of the members of the Women's Press Club of Pittsburgh. What's the reality for women in journalism today? And what can Brooke and her study of the history of that kind of contribute to that conversation? So that's one that's coming up that we're really excited about. Yeah. There will be other programs throughout the run of the exhibit that will look at things like family genealogy. I know we're talking about a couple things related to sports, something regarding military veterans. So there's a lot that will be in the works. And as we develop those things, people can go to our website, HeinzHistoryCenter.org, and look under the section of coming attractions to check that out.
Oh, very fun. Yeah. And how long is this exhibit? Because it just opened last weekend. So how long is this going to be around?
It opened last weekend, and thank goodness it will be up for a while.
Good. Yes.
It will be up through October 6th, 2024.
So we got all summer and a little bit of fall.
So what we say is come now, check it out. And then come again when there's a program offered that is really of interest to you. So we hope people find some things that encourage them to come and visit and come back again. We'll be looking at, for example, we're talking with groups like Girls of Steel, looking at some other ways we can get some programming into the gallery on the weekends, for example, too.
Yeah. And this is on the first floor.
It is on the first floor. Okay. It's just off of the Great Hall in our McGuinn, our big traveling and temporary exhibit space. So if you mentioned Green, you'd seen the exhibit Green Book or the exhibit that featured the Apollo space capsule. It's in that very big space.
That very big space. So it's a very big exhibit.
It is a very big exhibit.
So give yourself lots of time to go see it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. And as a senior curator at the Heinz History Center, what do you do? What is your job?
I do a combination of what people would recognize as historical research, using the materials in our collection, using online sources, archives, and documents, but kind of merging that with three-dimensional materials, artifacts in our collection. We do work with other groups and do loans. And so a senior curator kind of gives meaning to the objects and images in our collection and then works on the development of, say, storylines for an exhibit. Hey, we're doing an exhibit on women's history. What are some of the themes we should be working with? How do we pick the kinds of stories we should tell? Yeah. We also, myself and other curators on the team, we do a lot of public programming. We go out into the community and talk about, we all have different sort of areas that we focus on and talk about local history subjects. And I know for me, one of the things I really enjoy is helping people understand how their own stories relate to that.
Yeah.
You know, the history of a place isn't just those big national people or those stories that impact something on a large scale, but your own family history, your community history, that is part of the story of this place as well. And I know for many of us who work, especially in the curatorial field and go out and collect things, one of the great pleasures is going out and seeing how much it means to people that they realize their own stories, are part of the history and the narrative of that place.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're part historian, part going out and researching, part curatorial, part maybe even a little
part
archivist,
storyteller.
Part storyteller. Yeah. There's so many different hats you wear.
There are. And I think for some of us, that's why we're drawn to it. Mm-hmm. I like the research and I enjoy the writing, but man, I look at those people who put out this huge book and I wonder, I don't know if I have the patience for that. I love working with the three-dimensional materials and putting the pieces together. How do you take that object, find a couple great photos, and find some narrative that fits with it? And I enjoy conveying that to other people.
Yeah. Well, and you get almost instant gratification because you see people instantly engage with whatever you created, whereas a book, you might not get that.
Yeah, and that's a nice way to think about that, because it is more of an immediate, it's both an immediate engagement with the audience that you're working with and then looking at that story and getting a sense of what that means for people. But also sometimes you learn as much from them. You know, you can get tidbits that you didn't know. You can get a lead to something you had never heard of. You can get an insight into a topic from someone else sharing their story with you.
Yeah.
And in that sense, it's more interactive than, say, here's my book, I'll put it on the counter, go read it and let me know what you thought later. So.
Yeah. Making history relatable and a community event, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. Well, it is A Woman's Place, How Women Shaped Pittsburgh. It is at the Heinz History Center. It's on the first floor. You can go find it, go check it out. It'll be there till October. You've got plenty of time to go see it. Tickets are available, as always. You can always go find it. Leslie, thank you so much for talking with me today.
It's amazing. Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. And the Heinz History Center, we love WQED. We have some material from your story in our collection as well. So you're part of the history of Pittsburgh, too.